Hi, today is June 27th, 2015. This is Mobile Views Podcast number 120. And that's John Westfall's bird.
One of them, yes. I'm not sure which one that was, but he or she apparently wanted to be part of the show.
That's right, and had some thoughts on a few things we're going to be talking about today. I'm Todd Ogasawar, and that, of course, is my good friend John Westfall. The first thing I want to note is something real quick. In fact, I just added it to our discussion notes that John and I keep before we create a podcast, and that's this.
We actually do plan this podcast.
I know, it doesn't sound like it.
Especially after last week. We just went on a whole rant about old stuff. We actually do plan this out.
Yeah. And that's this, you know, so I have some old Macs. I have no new Macs, unlike John. And so I have to be really careful about the resources used on it. Otherwise, these podcasts have become unrecordable because things get so slow. But in any case, I have I have the first good generation of the MacBook Air from 2010. So it's getting pretty old, you know, long in the tooth, that I use to record many of these podcasts. And I had to remove Chrome from all of my Macs, because Chrome was just too slow, and everything runs in the background even when the browser shut down, so I had to just remove it. And I've been using Firefox a bit more. So this morning I fired up the Mac, and there was an update for Firefox, since I hadn't used this particular Mac in a little while, and I updated it. And my MacBook Air became a slug, and I couldn't figure out why, so I started looking around, and I found out that the Firefox plugin container process was using 60% of my processor.
Containing things really well.
Yeah, like a supernova.
There was a monster inside that container that it was at least only using up 60% of your time.
So after trying to fuss with Firefox a bit to figure out what was going on, I gave up because we had to record this podcast, and I shut down Firefox. Made sure the processor was killed. Sure enough, my processor use went way down, became very usable for a 5-year-old computer, really. And I'm back to using good old Safari, which does not do bad things to my processor. So at any rate, Firefox plug-in container and the latest rev, boo. Something's leaking.
It's interesting. You were talking about older tech, and I have a 2009 MacBook Pro that I booted up this week and just kind of did some TLC with, you know, made sure it's not running. It's running, I think, OS 10.7, so that's Lion. I've never upgraded, although I hear it can run Yosemite, which I would be interested to try, but maybe after I bump the RAM up from 4 gigs to 8.
Just as an FYI, I have, actually my daughter, I inherited my daughter's 2009 MacBook Pro. She got a 2013 MacBook Air when she went off to college. And so I've got probably the similar model to yours, maybe with a little less RAM. Probably only has 2 gigs of RAM. And it is running, whatever the heck is the latest one, Yosemite, I guess.
Yeah.
And it is kind of a slug, and I've been trying to fuss with it a bit to try to figure out why it's a slug. But so far, you know, I've done the usual. I removed Chrome. I uninstalled Microsoft OneDrive, uninstalled Google Drive. I think the only thing I've left syncing is Dropbox, and that may be the next to go.
Well, one of the things I realized and what I was reading, because I was thinking about, should I spend some money and upgrade this thing?
Yeah.
Because the RAM upgrade would be pretty cheap. It'd be around $50 for me to pop another 4 gigs of RAM into it and get it up to 8 gigs.
Yeah.
And it would be about $30 to buy a new battery for it, because it's got service battery warning right now. The battery still holds a charge, but who knows how long of a charge.
Right, right.
And but really what I was reading, what most people were saying, was that it's the SSD that really is what you need. If you wanted to really get it moving faster with Yosemite, just with all the disk read write stuff, you'd want an SSD. And I'm not really willing to throw an SSD into it, so I'm just kind of keeping it where it is. And I use it in my lab at work, and, you know, when students are running surveys and things like that, you know, OS 10.7 works just fine for that sort of thing. But, you know, going off your earlier discussion of browsers, I've used Safari almost exclusively for about 2 years now. And I keep Firefox on my machines just as a backup, plus there's a plugin for anything you want to do web development with Firefox. So, but I found Safari to be a perfectly capable browser, and I've been very happy with its optimizations.
Yeah, you know, in the last couple of months, I found Firefox to be a pretty good alternative to Chrome, at least in the Windows boxes. So, you know, in order to be more or less consistent, I've also been using it on Mac, but I guess that's, I'll have to wait for another upgrade or two to see if they fix whatever the heck the plugin container is doing.
I will have to take a look, because I fire up Firefox maybe once every couple weeks for something, yeah. And I'll have to see if next time I do that, if it gets screwy like that.
Yeah. Okay, so next up, we're speaking about things Apple, is iOS 9, which won't be available till what, do you think, September, October? Did they announce a release date?
I'm thinking mid-September. That's usually when it is. It's usually either right around the time of new iPhones or the day new iPhones drop, the new OS drops. So, point. Around September, early October.
Good point. So one of the neat things about iOS 9 is it's going to have a low-power mode to kind of throttle down the phone or iPad so that you can get a little bit more battery life. Now, that said, I get excellent battery life on my iPhone and iPad devices. So, you know, the only time I think I might use it is when I'm traveling. You know, and as you know, I live in the middle of nowhere. So when I travel, anything is a 5.5 hour trip for me. But in any case, that when you throttle it down, it's about 40% processor slowdown. And my thinking is, on current generation devices, 2014 devices, you know, iPhone 6, 6 Plus, and iPad Air 2, I don't think you're going to take much of a hit. I think those machines are so fast that you probably might not notice. And if you're on a long flight and, you know, you're just trying to play some games that doesn't require a lot of speed, watch a video, I think it'd probably be okay. Because basically you'd have like an iPad 2, right?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of speed.
Especially listening to music and things like that on long flights, I could see that being very useful. One thing that I noticed is the only time I ever get down to really low battery, it's always an accidental sort of thing. You know, that day, for whatever reason, I have some app that's just chugging away, or I end up having to wait somewhere for a few hours and use my phone the whole time. So that's when I see myself kicking this in, either at the beginning of that process going, okay, I'm going to be using my phone fairly heavily, let's try to eke out as much battery as I can. Or when you look at the phone and it's only got 20% battery left, and you go, oh, well, I need to make it another couple hours before I get to a charger. So.
Right. And one of the things I've had to learn is basically to change my behavior when I'm traveling and not near a power supply. Although I do carry, like you, you know, I carry an extra battery or two, an extra external battery or two. But still, you know, it's not always convenient to plug in your device to an external battery when you're on the move. So the best thing I found is, if you're going to take a lot of photos, don't upload them while you're on the run. Just do it, you know, when you can sit down near a Wi-Fi access point and do it maybe a little bit faster. Well, not necessarily a little bit faster, but a little bit cheaper in the battery. I found that using Wi-Fi seems to eat the battery a lot less than using LTE for uploads.
Yeah, and especially if you're going to be taking photos, if you know you're going to be taking a lot of photos, take a point and shoot camera.
You know, that's a good point, because then you'll get optical zoom and all kinds of other good stuff.
I had a couple weeks ago, my wife and I and another couple went up and visited, the birds didn't like when we left, we went up and visited Graceland, which is about 2 hours from us, and I took a lot of photos, because I take a lot of photos everywhere I go, and I worked my iPhone's battery down from about 95% to about 25%.
Wow, yeah, that's a lot of photos.
Well, it's a lot of photos, and also it was a hot day.
Uh-huh.
And the heat, you know, gets hotter and hotter. The phone gets less and less, I suppose, as capable. At one point, it disabled my flash, even though flash was disabled anyway. It was, you know, saying your phone is running too hot. I've seen the battery dies pretty quickly that way. If I had known I was going to take so many photos, I probably would have grabbed my point and shoot. But
yeah,
it was a spur of the moment trip to see the king.
Yeah, you know? and quite honestly, you know, these days, like you probably, I use my point and shoot camera less and less. I have to make a conscious decision to pick it up and find it and carry it and all that kind of stuff.
It comes with me to major events that I know I'll be shooting a lot, especially now that I use an iFi card that uploads straight through to my phone.
Mm.
So I don't have that weird issue, although the last thing we'll talk about today kind of fixes that up, where, you know, I've got photos from this event stored in this folder, and then photos that I took off the cuff with my phone is in another folder somewhere.
Yeah.
I have photo unity now, thanks to what we'll talk about last today. But,
okay.
I didn't always have that. It was kind of frustrating.
Okay, and next up is a complete shift from Apple, Microsoft and Google, the dynamic duo. So Microsoft released, I shouldn't say released, so Microsoft Word, Excel, and PowerPoint are available for Android tablet for a while. And there was something called Microsoft Office Mobile for the Android phones. But earlier this week, Microsoft released their Word, Excel, and PowerPoint apps for Android for both devices in, I guess, production phase. They're both in preview phase up until now. So if you've been, you know, hankering to use Office on your Android device, it is now generally available, not in preview or beta or whatever you want to call it. And they're separate apps on a phone versus a combined app, which they were until earlier this week. So there you go. I have not really played with them much on Android yet.
And I have not either. But given what I've seen with Microsoft using some very intelligent ideas about how to reach the tablet market, to the point almost where it's funny that you get a better experience on a Microsoft product on an Android or iOS device than you do on a Microsoft device. It can't be anything but a good thing.
And that's certainly true for Windows 10, which Office, actually, they don't have the current Office in tablet mode. They have, or touch mode, they have 2016 beta, which I've installed but not really played with.
I haven't played with that either.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. If you're an Android user, Microsoft Office is there for you for free. You know, I should mention that, and I haven't really checked it against the iOS version, but there are some gotchas that if you do not have Office 365 subscription, a number of features are turned off, including, I think, I want to say review mode or something like that, which is, you know, really important if you work with other people in drafting documents or dealing with spreadsheets and that sort of thing. But I'll have to go check on that list of things.
That is a good question. I do not have an Office 365 account, and I have an iPad with Word here. So while you introduce our next topic, I will see if review mode is available.
Yeah. Okay. So the next one is another googly kind of story, and that's basically Google working towards providing free Wi-Fi in New York City, and they did this by buying. Did they actually buy them? Did they buy a partner? But anyway, there are two companies, entities in that area that were working towards this goal. And the Google, and I'm bringing it up on my web browser because I can't even remember what I read earlier. Oh, yeah, Sidewalks Lab Project, which is supposed to do some, like, urban innovation stuff, it's acquiring two companies, one called Control Group and the other called Titan, which were working on something called Link NYC to create free Wi-Fi in New York City. So
birds hate free Wi-Fi.
Well, you know, it interferes with their navigation, I think.
It does.
Because, you know, they, unbeknownst to us, they've been using 2.4 and 5 gigahertz frequencies to communicate with each other for millennia.
Yeah, and now they're really annoyed. And they also had their own version of GPS that ours threw off.
Yeah, so. You know what really throws them off is when they get Netflix when they're trying to navigate.
No, that just sidetracks them. They all sit on one area and binge watch, you know, and then they get back to normal.
But in any case, there's going to be Titan is an advertising network, so it's going to be free, but it will not be ad-free. So I guess it'll be one of those things where, you know, you need to look at an ad every hour or so to kind of pay for the network. I mean, these networks don't run by themselves. You know, somebody has to manage them, and you have to take care of the hardware and the network and all of that. And John is holding up his iPad to the screen, and what am I looking? Review mode on iPad.
We have review mode.
So yeah, so
without an Office 365, at least on iOS, you get review mode.
Yeah, so I'll post something either up on Mobile Views or ExtremeTech.com. With a link to the Microsoft site that tells you what is available if you do not have Office 365 subscription and are running one of the Microsoft Office components on your Android device. But in any case, getting back, so that's pretty cool. You know, there's mm-hmm. been a number of attempts over the years. Most of them failed, by the way, to provide free Wi-Fi. You know, there's one in, I want to say, San Francisco. I think it was Google, actually, may have tried it, or Facebook. And, you know, one in, I don't want to say San Jose, that doesn't sound quite right, but somewhere in that area, somewhere down south of San Francisco where they tried it. I think Verizon even tried to create Wi-Fi hotspots in their old phone booths 10 years ago, a long time ago. So, you know, this is not the first time people have been trying to do free Wi-Fi. It is, it's one of those things that, you know, it sounds really appealing, and it is really appealing, but it is not as easy to do as, you know, sticking an access point somewhere and turning it on for people to use. There's a lot behind it, and I hope Google is able to do something with it. But, you know, to me, what they're really trying to do is not the humanitarian aspect of it, which is, you know, giving free Wi-Fi to people as they're wandering around, but to make sure that their new Google Fi, which can switch off from cellular to Wi-Fi to carry voice and data, has a good experience in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory.
That's a perfectly good theory, and New York City is especially a difficult place to get these things going because of all the little nooks and crannies and, you know, the subway and everything else that people expect to see if there's Wi-Fi everywhere.
That's right. Wi-Fi. You spent a bit of time in New York City, didn't you, while you were in grad school?
3 years as a postdoc in New York.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty aware of the intricacies of Manhattan and everything else up there.
Yeah. And also New York City, as I recall, has a lot of cellular dead spots, or at least did. I don't know about today, but in old days, it was hit and miss trying to get around New York City and getting a signal.
It was pretty good when I was there, and I was on T-Mobile, and this was about 3 to 5 years ago was when I was there for 3 years. And we didn't have much problem with T-Mobile's network. AT&T, although T-Mobile no one was using. So AT&T, I heard a lot of horror stories about. Of course, nothing worked in the subway except occasionally Verizon. But then there was all that point. At that point, there was a bunch of pushes to try to get things into the subway. So I have no idea what the subway system looks like now. Although at some point I will make it back there and explore and report back.
Yeah. Okay. Next up is something that's, you know, not exactly new and conceptually, but I kind of like the idea, and that's Lenovo's IdeaStick 300, which is a $130 stick. It looks like a USB drive, but a thumb drive, but instead of sticking it into a USB port, it plugs into an HDMI port. And as you might guess, as I said earlier, since I used the word PC, it's, even though it looks like a thumb drive, it's really a PC that runs Microsoft Windows and has a USB port for it, you know, keyboard and that sort of thing. And of course, since it plugs into HDMI, that's how it displays. So, kind of an interesting concept, $130 PC, if you have a I guess if you're traveling around and you don't want to carry a notebook, but you're going to be visiting people's offices and labs and things, you could just borrow somebody's display and grab somebody's keyboard and have a PC on the go.
What I would love to see these go into would be the education market.
Yeah, that's where it makes sense, doesn't it?
You know, just places where you've got computer labs and you've got, if it's powerful enough to run basic office and it's going to be connected to a network, I could see a lot of big companies and also education saying, okay, well, we can just get rid of all of those huge, cases that we have and just plug these straight into a display, and then users can browse the network, save files to their network drive, download files, etc.
Yeah.
So I think that would be a nice thing about it.
Yeah, I think the challenge in some of those environments would be securing the darn thing. I mean, they're so small, you know, somebody could just unplug it, put it in their pocket or purse or whatever, and off it goes. So maybe we'll see little cages on the back of displays.
Little cages or
dogs.
I mean, it has to be pretty compact in there, but maybe you can drill a Kensington port into it or something.
Yeah, like a really super strong keychain thing that you wire up to your... Yeah, maybe.
Electromagnet.
Yeah.
Be bad around the computer, but whatever, you know, around a monitor.
Yeah.
We'll see.
You know, that said, though, you know, I have a little Raspberry Pi running headless right now that I honestly haven't done as much as I thought I would do. It's just one of those things, but it's kind of like a Raspberry Pi, except in a Raspberry Pi, you need to actually plug a cable into it to get it out to a... Actually, it's a DVI, so I have to use a DVI to HDMI converter, or it's the opposite, HDMI to DVI converter. But it doesn't run Windows, so that's, you know.
With $130, too, you could just issue them to students.
Yeah.
A lot of schools, you know, make a big splash when they issue laptops or they issue iPads. But this could be a very easy, hey, here's your computer. It's $130. We've got displays all over the place you can plug into.
Yeah.
And you know, just go off of that, and then you can take it home and plug it into your TV at home and use it there. And
right.
Yeah. There's some definite things here. I hope Lenovo actually takes advantage of marketing this and selling it properly, because I think that's really the only thing that limits some of these cool things that we see come out, is that nobody knows how to sell the product, and thus the product dies.
Yeah, and you know, from a market psychology point of view, they needed to get it under $100. It needs to be $99.99.
Well, bulk purchase. I'm sure with $99.99.
Yeah. But you know, that would be, that's, I think that's a number that would really strike the hearts of consumers, saying, hey, it's under $100, you know, versus even if it's only $30 more, it's still, you know, a couple of lunches.
That's true.
Yeah. Okay. Now, speaking of something a little odd is that, well, a lot of people's favorite accessory for phones has been banned from a number of places. And the latest place is where, John?
Disney Parks has announced this week that you are no longer allowed to bring your happiest selfie stick on Earth into the happiest places on Earth.
Yeah.
This is after some somewhat crazed photo fanatic decided to take a selfie on a roller coaster and put the stick out, and the ride was basically a sensor on the ride tripped, and the ride had to be evacuated and
all these
other things. But it's the thing about selfie sticks that really amuses me and intrigues me is I get the safety argument from Disney. You know, obviously, if people are going to do crazy things like that,
right,
this is a projectile sort of thing as well as a, you know, blunt object sort of thing.
Yeah.
But the thing I just wonder about is how much selfie stick hate is just purely driven by the fact that when people see other people using them, they just get so annoyed with how stupid it looks.
You know what it is? For people who travel on airlines a lot, it's the new roller bag, right? Don't roller people, yeah, roller bags and blocking the aisles just drive you crazy?
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't think it's so much that people have an ideological opposition to selfie sticks or an ideological opposition to people taking pictures. It's just you look so dumb when you do it.
And you annoy people.
You annoy people by that sheer thing. It's a
like,
very
hey, don't swing that thing when you're
phenomenon.
Taking your photo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't look like you're having fun here. We're all miserable here.
You know, on the other hand, it has been banned from a number of museums because, you know, there's a very real possibility of damaging very valuable art objects and even not so valuable art objects. And even some objects, you go, that's art? But in yeah. any case.
The selfie stick itself may be art in a yeah. very short amount of time.
Yeah.
Although, as I told you before we start recording, I was not even aware of how, you know, sophisticated these things were. So I was on Amazon this week looking at selfie sticks going, you know, they're only $20 and,
yeah, they're not,
you know,
that
remote
expensive.
Bluetooth. And honestly, the thing that I've been using now when I want to take a group photo is my Apple Watch. My Apple Watch can look at the viewfinder on my phone. So you set up the phone somewhere. I've been propping up my phone on people's windshield wipers
yeah.
and other places where it can get a view of us. And then we stand and I hit a button and 3 seconds later, it takes the picture, and that's been working out fairly well without having to use a selfie stick.
You know, maybe we could repurpose a selfie stick so that, you know, it could be, it's a Bluetooth trigger, essentially, so we could use it with our pets and have them trigger food delivery and things like that, so.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also a Bluetooth trigger that we could use for, you know, setting off our self-defense systems and things like that.
There you,
know,
you go.
If it gets too close to you, you hit the button. And
yeah, boom.
Yeah. Of course, for that, you might as well just get a taser.
Yeah, so. There you go. Or a big dog.
That too.
Sick 'em.
Like my Saturday joke today. You know, what do you get when you cross a leopard and a watchdog?
Okay, what do you get?
You get a very frightened mailman.
Yeah, this is very, very true.
Yep.
Well, you know, it's like I said, right? You know, so I live in Honolulu, and the news reporter the other day said that 20,000 lions would be at the Honolulu Convention Center. I said, boy, that's kind of scary to think about.
Yeah, I was going to ask how that was working out for you. I don't see a lion behind you clawing at the door,
no.
So I assume that you're okay.
Yeah, I'm a few miles away, so.
Well, they can travel.
They travel on foot, though.
They'll get there. They might be waiting. It might take them a little longer, but they might be tracking you right now.
Okay, and finally, and definitely not least, is something I think both you and I have been playing with extensively, I think is the word. So I shouldn't say I did it. My good old PC, which is an old quad-core, non-i-anything PC that's been keeping all my photos safe for many years now, since I think 2008 is this is the age of this desktop PC. And it finished uploading the 70,000 photos and video clips that it had been storing safely for me. And I have backups of it elsewhere, of course, you know, on external drives. But 70,000, I also uploaded 8,000 plus photos from my various iOS devices and Android devices. So I've got about 78,000 photos and video clips uploaded now. It was an interesting journey. It took a couple of weeks. I think it took 2.5 weeks or so to actually complete.
And it made my 25,000 just seem really small in comparison.
That was my test upload. But I'm a lot older than you. I've taken a lot more photos over the years. So a couple of things I learned. Thing number one is that although I read earlier, and I think I wrote it in my Extreme Tech article, that it could handle RAW files, it rejected my Canon RAW files, CRW files. So I'm not sure if they rejected all of them, but I know it rejected 30 or 40 of them. And I'm pretty sure I took more than that. So I need to go look and see what happened up in Google Photos, see if anything actually is there. It's kind of hard to search. That's the other thing I learned. Once you upload a couple thousand photos, it becomes kind of hard to find stuff, specific stuff. I mean, you can search, and Google search is excellent for the most part, although my daughters and my pet rabbits have turned up as bears, dogs, cats, and a host of other animals. They're kind of
They're shapeshifters. Yeah.
They are the Uber animal. And I also ran into a problem that desktop PC I had also had Google Drive Sync installed on it. And it started looping with Google Photos. So as it uploaded photos from the PC to Google Photos, it started downloading them back to the PC in a separate drive, the Google Drive folder. So I had to uninstall Google Drive because basically it was going in an infinite loop and taking up all kinds of I.O.
That sounds fun, though.
It was weird is what it was.
So I will say that my biggest delight is that Google finally got it right, and that was I want to be able to have a place where all my photos live.
Absolutely.
Not just the photos I took with this device and not just
right.
what I want to pay for. And so by offering basically free storage for photos that they're allowed to resize, Google made a very smart move in getting people like me who said, I just want to have a place where I can look through. I kind of have a good memory of when I took a photo. So I want to be able to go, okay, well, what about 2008 or 2000, this and that. So that's the real benefit that I have gotten from this and the real enjoyment I've gotten out of it is that I have finally a place where I can find these things. And it is interesting with the older stuff that is not image tagged. I'm looking at images of Washington, D.C. in my Google Photos right now, and it has a bunch of photos from a trip I took there in 2002 that, that camera – let me see what it even was. It was a ClickSmart, Logitech ClickSmart camera that took a photo that was 0.3 megapixels.
Mm-hmm.
And it knows that it's in Washington because it's picking out landmarks.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing that, and I should note that one of the other interesting things before I say that is related to what you were saying is on my desktop, I noticed that it was uploading photos in reverse chronology. So the most recent photos got uploaded first, and then it slowly went back in time. And I have digital photos going back to the 1990s. So, it took a long time to get back. But then one of the neat things, of course, is I got younger and thinner. I don't have a lot of photos of myself in my collection. It's mostly my daughter and pets and things. But it was kind of fun to watch me get younger. But in any case, what I was going to say is that as it got further and further back in time, since it was uploading reverse chronology, like you, I started noticing. I said, "Oh, these photos don't have any metadata for location; they just have time." So I didn't expect them to get identified. But even after I finished uploading, and I had a second thought: it's finished uploading. It's already given me a bunch of enhanced photos and created animations and stories and movies and things. It's done. But no, it actually is keeping chugging along. And every couple of hours, I find that it's created a new story. And like you, I found it's correctly identified where I took those photos, even though there's no GPS data in the metadata. So it's been really fun to, see, like 2002 trip to DC or something like that.
Yeah. And I would never keep this as my only copy of these photos. No. I'm definitely going to have my my systems continue to back up regularly and everything stored on them. But yep. In terms of just finding a photo or just going on a trip down memory lane, going what was going on, you know, 10 years ago, et cetera, it's a really nice service.
Yeah, and I really do enjoy the stories it creates. And it's literally, it's called Stories, where it puts together a bunch of photos. And if it has GPS data, it'll even show you what's nearby that I didn't even know about. Like, I didn't know as I was walking down in Seattle that I was literally probably yards away from a wall made out of gum. near, I think, Pike's Marketplace. But in any case, I learned that as part of where it kind of added it into my thing. It says, hey, you know, you're walking nearby this wall of gum. I said, I did.
You were walking by a wall of gum. That's something that you want to know more about.
So that was really, really fascinating. And I'm really glad that I took the time and electricity to upload all my photos over 2.5 weeks or so. Because like you now, you know, unlike you, I should say, I never did do a full backup to the cloud.
And I have been, as we've established, backing up to CrashBlam for quite some time now. And so I've been able to at least know that my photos are safe, but not necessarily find them. Because they're all sitting in 100 different folders named after whatever that camera uploaded its folder as. You know, my older cameras, every time you did a photo upload batch, sometimes you didn't delete the photos out. So you'd have 2 or 3 photo folders that had the oldest photos duplicated and things like that. So it was a real mess.
Yeah.
That's much easier.
That's a neat thing about Google Photos is now your photos are discoverable or rediscoverable. Mm-hmm. You can find the gems in there that you probably forgot about. I know I forgot about a lot of them. And you can search because it is Google. It's not perfect, but you can search for it in interesting ways. For example, type in red and all the photos with a lot of red in them come popping out at you in the search results, or blue or green or any other, you know, reasonable color that it understands. You can search for a lot of things. You can search for bridges. You can search for weddings or Christmas or, you know, and it figures out things like that.
And I just did a search for your face. And
well, that must have been frightening.
What is interesting is I take a lot of screenshots on my devices, and those have, of course, made their way into this as well. So not only do I see photos that you and I are in or photos I took of you and things like that, I also see screenshots of, you know, conversations we've had that I've saved on Twitter or whatever. That's kind of an interesting thing to be able to look up, too.
Yeah. You know, that's the other interesting. I'm trying to figure out how it knows that. So I'm trying to figure out how it knows people's names. Because let me back up. So in Picasa.
Well, it doesn't know your name yet.
It kind of does.
It's to find your face.
Well, it's kind of weird because actually if you search for some names, it actually knows them. And I don't think it's the Google profile. You know, I don't think it's linking into a Google profile. But you can type in maybe like your mom or somebody who may not have a Google profile. Or at least not one with her photo in it. And it might find it just by typing a name. And I don't know how it's doing that.
Well, I typed your name and it says no results.
Okay, that's good.
Try a synonym or more general word. Do you have a synonym to your name?
No, I don't think I do.
Yeah, well.
Mobile views? I don't know.
Todd something else.
But in any case, searching for kind of random concepts in Google Photos can be a lot of fun. And, of course, it sorts by place reasonably well, even without GPS data, as we mentioned. But you can search for, you know, San Francisco or, you know, London or wherever you happen to have been when you took photos. And it does a reasonably good job of searching those things down, even if the GPS data wasn't available for it.
Yeah. So it gets our seal of approval until we find that it takes up 60% of our processor time or some other weird thing. But I think Google finally got it right. Now, the next... finally got it right that we can look for the first company that decides to do video matching.
Mm-hmm.
So all of the ripped episodes from DVDs that I have, I can upload and have those in the cloud. That will be the next company that gets it right. And the first company that decides that it is a good idea to allow people to discover their social media in an easier manner. So, you know, indexing 5-6 years of my Facebook, my Twitter, everything else, along with photos I took, so I can basically type in any given date and know exactly what I was doing that day.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of getting it right, this is a case of getting it right too late. But I got a message, an email message from Swarm the other day saying, hey, you're laughing because you got the same mail.
I did, so, and I installed it again because I want my mayorships back.
Yeah. It said, hey, we've got the mayorships back, but everything we had about you is lost, so you're not mayor of anything anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, so I like you, I reinstalled it. I powered it up once or launched it once, and I found nobody I know is on it anymore. Well, maybe three people. So are you using it again?
If I remember to. It used to be I got really good at when I showed up somewhere checking in, and now I don't do that anymore, so it's going to take me a while. There is a Swarm Apple Watch extension that I can use to easily check in. Plus, there's a notification widget, so checking in got easier. Right. Than it ever has been before, but yeah, I'd like to get my mayorships back and have my street cred.
Well,
in my own mind,
I'll see if I use it again. I'm just so. If anybody from Foursquare is listening, I'm still angry at you people. you ruined a highly gamified behavior. I was, you know, very much in the rhythm of. You know, I was checking in everywhere I went, and I found it useful. In addition to the mayorships, to be honest, because, you know, Nazi, what restaurant did you, you know, eat that at? I don't know. Let me look. And
well, and that's why I have little apps now that just record that for me.
Yeah.
So I can look that up, but I'm not, I don't actually check in anymore. I just have an app I've used forever called PlaceMe that even though it hasn't updated in 3 years, it still works reliably, that just records where I'm at every day and throws it to Evernote.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of last thing, you know, this is not in our show notes, but something everybody else probably knows about except me. I finally tried using Siri to record reminders the other day, and I know it's done it forever, but you know me, I'm sort of late to the game here often. So one of the things I noted is that although I don't think you can do it using Siri at the time of creation, if you go into your reminder, you know, say an hour or so later after you talk into your phone, you can set a geofence kind of thing so that you can say, when I get near this place, pop the reminder up. You know, when I get to this grocery store or whatever it is you need to buy. And I've been finding that pretty useful, although it is a two-part process for me, and I have to remember to go put the location in later. Do you know if that's something you can do via voice? Because I can't figure it out so far.
I haven't tried it, because I usually only set, you know, tell me when I get, you know, how, you know, tell me at 6 o'clock tonight.
Right. Like time-based versus place-based.
Yeah, there might be a way to do that through voice. We'd have to check that out.
Well, maybe somebody can tell us. But anyway, very handy feature. Alrighty, so this has been a hodgepodge of stuff, which is not unusual for us. Nope. Mobile Views Podcast number 120, John Westfall and me, Todd Ogasawara, and we will talk to you next time.